transformation change.
Blog Talk Radio.
Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. A bipartisan group of House members is urging the Defense Department to support replenishment of Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system. The group sent a letter to Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin and cited the recent deadly conflict between Israel and Hamas. The letter says the U.S. must confirm its ironclad commitment to Israel's safety and security. President Biden will announce a national month of action to get more Americans vaccinated. Biden wants to get 70% of American adults partially vaccinated by July 4th. A White House statement calls it an all-of-America sprint. The national campaign will involve local government leaders, community-based and faith-based entities, businesses, social media influencers, celebrities, and athletes. New York City's bringing vaccinations into the schools. Mayor Bill de Blasio says this will start Friday with mobile pop-up vaccine sites opening in four schools in the Bronx, and then the effort will expand to all boroughs in the coming weeks.
It's going to be a way to reach a lot of young people quickly, and it's going to be a way to encourage parents to understand what a great feeling it is to know your child is safe.
Right now, students age 12 and older are eligible. De Blasio says about 118,000 New Yorkers age 12 to 17 are vaccinated in the city. That's 23% of children in that age range, slightly ahead of the national average for that age group. Ohio Governor Mike DeWine wants lawmakers to pass stiffer penalties for felons who possess a gun after a mass shooting in Springfield.
I've asked the General Assembly to dramatically increase the options to judges, prosecutors, in regard to the penalties for those individuals.
One of the suspects in the Springfield shooting is accused of being a convicted felon who had no legal right to have a firearm. DeWine says while his proposed bill from 2019 won't solve all of the gun problems, it will save lives. WDTN reports that six people were shot at the party at a barber shop. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Hi, I'm Dr. Shelley Blaise with today's tip for kids from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Kids are full of energy, but keeping them active in their teen years can be a challenge. Aim for an hour of physical activity every day. If they're like sports, that's a great place to start. Keep the focus on fun, not winning, and encourage your child to do a variety of activities. If your child isn't meeting that 60-minute goal, gradually increase their activity in ways they enjoy. For more, talk with your pediatrician or visit healthychildren.org.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your alternative talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Another gorgeous and sunny warm day we have in store for us today. High temperatures around 84, 85 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the west and northwest at 6 to 10 miles per hour. It takes the edge off the heat. Tonight, mostly clear skies, low temperatures dropping down to about 57, 58. Thursday, partly sunny skies and much cooler. Highs around 73, 74. With partly cloudy skies for Thursday night, lows down to about 54. For Friday, more sunshine again expected. For most of Friday, highs around 71. Clouds and a slight chance of rain showers moving in by Friday night. Lows down to about 55.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Had enough of the been there, done that ideas? Tired of too much talk and so little action? Rewind now and welcome to Transformation and Change Radio with Dr. Kathy Obair, where the vision of true equity, inclusion, courage, and purpose meet powerfully. Dr. Kathy delivers with dynamic, engaging conversation and the most authentically brave dialogue on air today. This hit show will challenge you to explore current issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion and deepen your capacity to choose courage to speak up to greater inclusion in everything you do. Fasten your seatbelts and accelerate your effectiveness to become a powerful change agent in your life, community, job, and society. Imagine true equity and inclusion and get the tools to really manifest your vision. No frills, no fluff, just really powerful, good stuff. Transformation and Change Radio starts now.
Welcome to today's show. I couldn't be more excited to welcome Angel Howard, the owner of Necessary Change Consulting, as we are beginning June 2021, a time a week ago acknowledging the murder of George Floyd, a time of racial reckoning, especially last summer in protests, Black Lives Matter organizations saying we're going to become anti-racist organizations. And today we'll be talking about how far some organizations have come, how far they need to go, and strategies. because I'm finding some backlash, some backsliding, and some, oh, we really never said that. And what I'm particularly excited about is the term glass cliff. And there's going to be several other things we talk about. But I think you were the first person on one of the community connections that I heard that from. And so I can't wait to have you all meet Angel Howard, also the Associate Director of Professional Development and Staff Recognition at Illinois State University. And so internally, you do systemic change work around equity, inclusion, racial justice, supporting the success of minoritized student staff, as well as my guess is you get asked and you say yes all over Illinois State. And I love Illinois State because this was, what, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago. One of your colleagues, a couple of your colleagues said, let's create something. We created the Inclusion Partner Program, which has probably morphed since I was there. And so that's when I first met you, and just so excited to welcome you, Angel Howard, to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for the opportunity. I definitely love your work, and I love working with you every chance I get.
Well, I can't wait to have the universe give us time to get to do consulting and training together so I can keep learning from you for today. Could you just help listeners know a bit more about you and how you're doing, and maybe how your early life experiences or other life have fed into this core life work and passion to dismantle racism, other forms of oppression, to create true liberation for folks?
So for me, I think, you know, growing up, period, it was just an interesting interesting life. I am an adopted person. I was adopted by a family member. And so growing up, I kind of experienced some, well, I definitely experienced racism, but I also dealt with a lot of colorism. My mother is a beautiful chocolate woman, and, you know, people looked at me as if I didn't belong, as if I wasn't supposed to be her child, or if, you know, I couldn't possibly be black. So those are kind of things that I dealt with growing up. And then I also went to, I always went to predominantly white schools that were typically upper class, but I wasn't upper class, like, as far as financially. And so trying to fit into those spaces that just weren't for me. And so that was always very challenging. But, you know, growing up, I never ever thought that I would be doing diversity, equity, and inclusion work. I knew my experiences. I knew how I felt. But it was not something that I thought. I always thought I wanted to be a social worker. I wanted to be a family counselor. That was where my trajectory was going. But it wasn't until I started going to college. I was a non-traditional student. I didn't go to school until I was 28 with a kid and a husband and all that good stuff. And I myself didn't really know that college was in my preview. Like, I didn't know that it was something for me. I had a full understanding that college was for rich people, that it was for folks that, you know, had the capacity to do that. And so I didn't know that was me. But it wasn't until I had my daughter that I was just like, you know, I want her to experience college, and how can I push that on her when I wasn't willing to give it a try myself. Little did I know I would still be a student today, finishing my final degree. But, you know, I think that's where a lot of things changed for me. It's where I really, really started to learn how to critically think things out, and also understand systems and organizations and just how they run. And during my master's program, I have a master's in social work, but during that program is when I think things really, really started to hit ahead for me. And at that time, I was in the middle of almost pretty much becoming a professional, but also a professional in higher ed, but also still a student. And so I had some terrible experiences as a student, and I was constantly trying to figure out, was it because I was black, was it because I was a woman, was it because I was older, was it because I was a big girl, like whichever one, I didn't know which one they were sticking on, so it kind of felt like a lot of things were being thrown in my direction. And so I remember leaving a class one day completely in tears, like completely hurt from an experience that I had hoped a professor would have realized was harmful. And so when I went, I had a supervisor at the time. His name was Josh Reed. I believe he's Dr. Josh Reed now. But he, you know, he listened to my cries. He listened to my frustration. And he was just like, well, Angel, if it frustrates you that much, do something about it. And that was kind of like my open door permission to telling me, you know, hey, you actually can do something about this, you know. And I don't think I really realized that. I knew I had a voice in some ways, but I didn't quite realize in that stage. And so that's what I did. And he opened up kind of a door for me to do like a little volunteer session that students could come to for 50 minutes. And I had it, you know, I focused on like cultural competence, but my main goal was to deal with race because that was the one thing I didn't feel like we were talking about at my institution at that time. And of course, you can imagine how many people volunteered to come, right? Yeah. And so it wasn't until a education professor assigned her whole class to come. And that day is probably when everything changed. And so the education department started asking me to come and work with their soon-to-be teachers constantly. And then I started getting known around campus just doing the work. And then eventually people outside of the campus started asking me to come and work with them. And so that's when I knew I had something. Like it was something that I'm very gifted in. I feel like I'm called to do. And so that's kind of like, you know, where everything bubbled down for me. But I worked in TRIO Student Support Services. That's during my master's, I got hired full time to do that. And so I was working with a lot of students who were sitting in my chair telling me their experiences. And it was the experiences that I had also. And, you know, and that's not to say, like, I think a lot of predominantly white institutions have these same things going for them when it comes to students of color and students from different backgrounds and identities. And so I really wanted to influence that, not just for me, but I wanted them to have a better experience, and I wanted them to know that this is their space, and they have a right to have a voice, and they have a right to fight for what's right and what's wrong and against what's wrong. And so that's kind of where my passion really, 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 really came from.
I am just loving your story and your passion as I hear you and learn more about you. You really have such intersecting identities that represent so many of the current students at all these predominantly white campuses, 4- and 2-year. And 4-year schools seem to think, oh, we'll just get more middle and upper middle class white kids that are able-bodied, right? And since George Floyd's murder, I've been paying attention more and learning more and realizing I still believe that institutions were really trying to help everybody. And we're not just created for people in privileged identities. And that, and if listeners might still resist that, but it was a, you know, earthquake, kind of whatever those are called, shift to really hear, particularly black folks say, oh, no, institutions are working just like they were set up, mm-hmm. whether it's higher ed, K-12, criminal justice system, they are working just as they were intended.
Mm-hmm.
Since George Floyd's murder and last summer and the protests and continuing efforts, what are some of the opportunities and challenges that you are seeing where you are and all your consulting mm-hmm. that could, if leaders really lean in, really advance, accelerate the racial justice, social justice, and if that language isn't working in those organizations, greater inclusion? But I think more particularly white leaders said, I had no idea.
Yeah.
Especially since the insurrection on January 6th, which many people are trying to say really was just regular.
A nice gathering, right? A party.
Mm-mm. So in this resurgence of resistance, white supremacist, domestic terrorism, folks really saying that doesn't exist, what are you finding the opportunities and challenges, particularly inside organizations today?
So I will say that, you know, I've kind of had some great moments of just feeling inspired and seeing that people really have some great efforts and really want to do better. And then I've also, on the other hand, had some very drastic disappointments in some spaces that I've been in. And I think it's mainly because, you know, we don't know what we don't know. And the work that it takes to learn what we don't know, it is hard. It's hard, and it takes stripping down things that you have believed for 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years. And to believe one thing means that you got to go back in time where you found that thought or gained that thought and start stripping all the things that you may have done or not done within those years between. And so I think that's the really hard part, because we have a lot of people who are picking up books, who, you know, picking up certain books and they read it and then they're like, oh, I'm diversity, equity, and inclusion superhero now. And so I get folks like that sitting in some of my trainings who think they can educate me And don't get me wrong, I am a person that loves to learn. If you got something, give it to me. But if you came for something, you need to sit down and get it. And so that's a huge challenge that I'm having within a lot of places. Now, some other things is everyone is, you know, adding diversity positions, they're adding diversity committees, and they're doing stuff like that. But they add those things and then call me. And I think that we need to call some help and get some folks in before doing that, because we're not thinking it out very much. You know, we're taking volunteer folks that want to be on these committees. We're divvying it up by departments. Okay, give me two from here, two from here, two from here. And if you're really trying to do some good diversity, equity, inclusion work, some true anti-racism work in your institutional organization, you can't just pick people. You can't pick people to raise their hand. Now, you do want people willing to do the work, but they need to be capable of doing the work as well. And so I find that a lot of these spaces I come into, they have these made diversity committees, but these are not people that have ever even thought about this work. And they don't do the training. They don't have them learn the skills that they need, which is hard to do when you need to immediately start doing some work. And so then you're left with just this committee. And so I don't know how I'm falling into that, but that's become one of my specialties, is helping organizations build these committees and staff these committees, but also learn how to care for these committees, because we get these folks and we ask them to volunteer their time, which, you know, they're still working their position, but this is additional work that they're doing with no additional pay. We don't give them any leadership titles. We don't give them any power. But yet, hey, how about you fix our diversity, equity, and inclusion problems? And I think that's the biggest mistake that I've seen within a lot of places that I've been asked to work. Now, I've also had some places that I've been that I'm still working with that are kicking butt. Like, they are not playing any games, and they are seriously interested in getting into those really dirty, deep, dark closets that nobody's looked in for, you know, 50 years. And I think that is the beauty to me. Like, that's beautiful. But on the opposite side of that, they don't want to get in that closet. They just want me to clean a few cobwebs and then get on with my way. And that's hard. That's hard because, again, the foundation that a lot of these institutions and organizations were built on, which is white supremacy, which is whiteness, and we know that. And if that's the foundation, then if we're never getting to that foundation, we can't change anything. Nothing's going to change. It will float. It will come right through the little layers of flowers that were laying on top of it. And so I think I answered the question, but that definitely is what it made me think of, is just those feelings of being called just to be called, but not really being called to do the work that's necessary.
I'm at 64. I'm no longer to just be a part of checking the box of anti-bias. It's like, no, I want to do systemic change. Training can be part of it. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to go both avenues you did. Can you, let's say I'm the leader that says, I just created this diversity committee, or I want to create one. What kind of questions would you ask me, or what do you want your listener, our listeners, thinking about? So what are the pre-steps, and then once you have folk, and what kind of competencies, because I know 12 years ago, Inclusion Partners, we just didn't pick people. We had some competencies mm-hmm. we wanted. We had the managers help volunteer people, as well as people could volunteer themselves. So that's mm-hmm. similar to, so, and then I'd love the second part, and I can prompt again, a couple organizations, again, we won't name them, but that are like, oh, no, we want to open the closets. We want to get into the basement, the foundation of white supremacy that fuels day-to-day. How do we shift that, raise awareness, but really shift it? So that's where I'd love to go.
Okay, give me the first one again. I'm sorry. I started thinking of my answer for the second one that quick. Go for it.
Do you want to go there first? And
I'll say that the organizations that are really, really showing me that they are playing no games, those are the ones that are actually letting me get to their leadership. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they only bring me in to work with their diversity teams and then the staff. But if leadership are not being trained or even being taught how to support the diversity members that are going to be coming from their areas, then it doesn't work that way, because I can send a staff member to do something, but if the leadership is not interested in that or does not want to see that change happen, then it stops. And so that's been the biggest part is that, is letting me get into all of the pieces and making sure that training is happening simultaneously with everyone. And I also truly believe that leadership needs to be in those off-staff training. A lot of times people say, okay, I want you to meet with my staff, but I'm not going to be there. Mm-mm. They need to see you there, and you don't need to be sitting at a table in the front. You need to be sitting right along with them, having conversations with them, because we have to see our leadership as humans. We have to see them as people who also are trying to learn and get better at the things that they're doing. And unfortunately, when people climb the ladder, they are not always climbing the ladder and actually climbing the ladder and becoming more competent sometimes. Sometimes you climb that ladder and you've actually learned the system. You've actually learned what you can and can't do. And so you've learned to just play the game. And I think that that's a big problem if our leadership is just playing the game. And I get that there are more responsibilities when it comes to protecting an institution and protecting, you know, like we have to have money. We have to have the things that keep the institution going. So I do get that. And I know it's a sticky place and a tricky place, but it doesn't mean that you have to just play the game. If you know that policies are harmful, let's do something about it. You know, if you know that there's a closet that hasn't been looked at, let's do something about it. I can't tell you the time that I've been told, well, that's just how they are. You know, someone has done me wrong or someone has hurt me, and, well, that's just how they are. From leadership. No, no, no. Or the leader is who they're telling me, that's just how they are. And you can never, ever really create change if the top layer is the one that's causing most of the problems. And so those companies and institutions that have brought me in, because I work within higher ed, K-12, and I work within corporations. And so those that bring me in, they're really ready to let me get to even the leaders. And so that I love that. And then also, okay, so back to the first one. I remember it now. And just to say, we call it Inclusion Change Team now at ISU. That's what we call the team that you helped to create. And so, and they're amazing. I consistently have some amazing folks on that team that help with a lot of stuff that that is making big moves on our campus. But I think the biggest part about these committees, I think, is that, you know, sometimes they don't feel appreciated. Sometimes they don't feel like they are, they don't have the confidence to actually go into these spaces and say the things that need to be said and question the things that need to be questioned. Sometimes they're created, but with a muzzle. And that's a problem. Like, if you bring me in, but as soon as I get too deep in something, you smack in my hand or pat me on my head telling me to settle down, like, what are we really there for? And so I think a lot of folks who get brought into these things, they feel that way, you know? And so I think that's something that we really, really have to address when it comes to working with folks. Now, I know I didn't answer your first question. Remind me what it is now.
Well, what I love is you're reminding the leaders, listeners, that before they start these change teams, be really clear what's their role and do that collaboratively based on data.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's not just check the box, but are they a recommending group? Are we going to partner with them? Are we going to meet 3-4 times a year to have collaborative? We're going to do collective training so that we build relationships and competencies together.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are ways to do all you're doing as well as have it be organizational change and to negotiate what's our vision of an anti-racist inclusive organization together.
Yes.
The other thing I want to float by you, I started using competencies. I might have even shared my list, kind of 10. I think I'm at 11 now. And having leaders before they form these teams or as they are wanting to reimagine them, what are the competencies that we want to train people to, hold them mm-hmm. accountable to? And that includes we leaders no longer saying, oh, that's how they are or that's how we've always done things. So what are some of the competencies you want leaders, change teams to have, all managers, as we are moving into our second year of racial reckoning, social justice in all organizations?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would start with humility. You know, I do use the term cultural competence, which some people don't really like the word competence, but I don't look at it as a word of final knowledge. I look at it as the final knowledge of understanding that you will never know it all. And so to me, cultural competence and cultural humility have to be together. And that humility is doing some self-reflection and doing some self-work and really being able to question where your beliefs and your own thoughts have come from. And we need to make sure that the people that we're hiring have that capability. And I don't even think we ask questions about that. Like we say, what's your view on diversity, equity, and inclusion? Well, I think everybody's great, you know? And like that is not, you know, that's a problem. And imagine, just imagine if the leaders that we hired, we made sure they had these competencies before we hired them. How beautiful would that be, right? But we don't do that, unfortunately. And so I think the main thing is you always being willing to be a learner and you always reevaluating and checking yourself. And you also willing to set up training and things for the leadership team just as much as you're setting up for a staff, you know, or folks that's not within those areas. So I do think that's very important. I do think that they need to be critical thinkers. And I just want them to be human. I want them to be human, and I want them to be willing to say, I don't know that, but I need to know that. And if we could start there, like, we would see some big changes immediately.
And so be able to engage, listen deeply, notice if they go under fragility, defensiveness.
Oh, yeah.
And really look at the racialized socialization and how we were taught whiteness. And mm-hmm. then the skills for me, I want to check this, recognizing and responding to racist microaggressions.
Yes.
And then policies and practices that, as you mentioned earlier, still might be perpetuating white supremacy culture that might be privileging whites. How far can folks go before you start getting leaders resisting? What are you noticing?
Resistance from the first training that we're going to try to do, or there's actually resistance before I even come because they're going to say, hey, we're about to start this process. And so change is so hard for people. And I think that is, you know, that's probably one of the biggest skills that we need is to be able to change and understand where we need change at. And so I think resistance starts with just that. And I don't always think that resistance is connected to racism or discrimination. I just don't want to change. I don't want to be coming in telling me what I can and can't do. And so I think that's a huge thing that we have to kind of put our guard down. I don't really like change either. I'm not going to lie. Like, as a human being, I don't. Like, you come tell me that something's about to change, I'm like, why? Why are we doing this? And so I think as a consultant, that's something that I'm very gifted in is really talking to people about the why. And I'm okay with the why. Like, I think that's okay for you to have questions as long as you're willing to listen to my answers and be okay with them. But a lot of times we bring people in to commit change, but we don't include the people that's been on the campus already trying to change it. And we don't even ask them to be on the diversity committee, to be honest. Like, the folks who've been doing the really hard work, we don't include them in this process, and those are the people I seek out first. Like, who has been here? Who has been the voice? Let me have a conversation with them so that they can give me the information that I really need.
I heard a person of color say, nothing about us without us. And this last week I've been saying it more and more just to keep reminding me of all you're saying. As we go to break, we're going to come back and look more about the structures that will accelerate because individual training can only go so far. Can you help people know how they can find you?
Yes. You want me to do that now?
Yes, please.
Okay, so on actually, if you look up Necessary Change Consulting, you'll find me everywhere on Facebook, on Instagram, on my website, and then I'm also on Twitter, but it is Angel_NCCONSLT. So, you know, they couldn't give me my whole name on that one. But you can find me there. I'm very easy. Just Google me.
Can't wait to come back with Angel Howard, soon to be doctor. Maybe you want to talk about your research as we come back.
Sure.
Really looking at systemic organizational change, the glass cliff. We'll do a few more. Can't wait to come back. Thank you so much. We are Radio Center for Transformation and Change. We'll be back in a moment.
Patricia McMahon, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia, and I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that a whole self already knows.
Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in to Divine Guidance with Patricia and join in your personal adventure in triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
In a roundabout of dysfunction, stop circling around difficult issues and find out what's been holding you back. Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
It's time to get your life back on Burn Bright Today with Jennifer Marcinelli. Tune in each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn to move from the darkness of burning out to the light of burning bright. Jennifer is redefining stress and the energetic causes of burnout, shining a light on the process to get your life back. For more information about Jennifer and her work, visit burnbrighttoday.com.
Transition, simultaneously the most difficult and vital part of the human experience. Without change, how would we grow? Tune in to Grounding Into Your Radiance with Stacey Barber every second and fourth Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Step into your truth and allow the light into your life. For more information about Stacey and her services, visit StaceyBarber.com. That's Stacey, S-T-A-C-I-E, Barber.com.
Tune in to The Truth Is Funny with Colette Stephan each Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show will have you thinking outside the box and riding the wave of infinite potential. Join Colette on the Higher Self Network, inspiring listeners to shine their brilliance and ensure success while roaring with laughter as they recognize the humor of the giant cosmic joke. Visit TheTruthIsFunny.com.
Healing has a ripple effect. One person's healing affects everyone around them. This is where the power of sharing our stories can be so important. Tune in to Playing on the Edge Radio with Megan Edge each month on Transformation Talk Radio as Megan provides you with ways of sustaining radical and powerful changes in your life. Enact the power of radical change. To find out more about Megan Edge, visit her website at meganedge.ca.
Welcome back. I'm Dr. Kathy Aubert, Transformation Change Radio, having some great conversation, learning with soon-to-be Dr. Angel Howard, owner of Necessary Change Consulting and the Associate Director of Professional Development, Illinois State University for Equity, Inclusion, Social Justice. Thank you so much. We left off beginning to talk about resistance, and I have found after 3 decades of individual awareness, skill building, self-work even, wide accountability groups, or really dismantling racism, that unless we have structures, competencies, accountability, this is where we're moving, and then structures to move there, changing the policies, practices, we go back to the old ways as soon as leaders think, another crisis or I'm done, we've done enough. So would you talk a bit more about, as you do your consulting inside and outside organizations, how are you helping leaders think about ways to accelerate individual development, but then hold them accountable?
I work through, I think evaluation is a huge piece to accountability, and only good evaluation, you know. And before my current supervisor, I never quite knew what great evaluation was. When I tell you, by the time you get done being with your end of year evaluation with my current supervisor, you feel good. Even if there were some things on there that she said you need to work on, like she has given you complete language and understanding of what where she is holding you accountable. And so once I experienced that with her from the terrible evaluation experiences previously, like I learned that there's a lot of power in that. And so a lot of folks are motivated by outcomes, you know, so they're motivated by that, and they're motivated by what is this going to say about me at the end of the year. But most evaluations don't even consider DEI. Like, they don't even think about it. They really think about the work itself that you're doing and not the pieces that influence that. So, and I think that that goes along with faculty. It goes along with staff. It goes along with CEOs. Like, there's nothing in there that makes them have to answer the question, what have you done, one, to better yourself, to reflect on yourself, and then to also strengthen your team to make sure that this is something that, you know, you're doing your work through a DEI or anti-racist lens. And so I love helping people look at that stuff within their organizations. Like, how are you evaluating this? How are you going to even make sure that leadership is making sure that their staff is doing this? And then also evaluating leadership on how they're helping them do this. And so that's one of the big places that I start with them. And then I also just kind of review their mission statements, their vision. You know, like we, a lot of visions and mission statements say, we want to do great with diversity, but diversity only means difference. You know, it really means nothing unless you are putting some meat and putting some value to that. And so I really try to help them to improve that and then explain to me what it means once they've written it. Now tell me, how do you think this looks? You know, what does this look like? What does it show? What does it look like if it's successful, right? And so I get them to talk to me about that type of stuff. And so I love piling through papers and piling through websites and things like that. So not just working with the individuals. I love looking at how they are viewed by everyone and are you actually doing the stuff that you say you're going to do? And if you're not, then you need to change it. Or you need to, you know, do the work to make sure that it is happening. And so each organization is different with me. Like, I do not go into these places with a true checklist. I have my order of things that I like to do, but I first love to meet with the people that are asking for the change. I want you to tell me what's the problem. Like, don't tell me what you're doing well. What are the problems? Because if you bring me here just because it's the thing to do right now, then you have no clue what's going on or what we're about to do. And so I can tell their seriousness or how invested they are by the data that they bring to me and the work that they've already thought about and the holes that they've already kind of dug into. Those folks that come to me with all that stuff, I'm like, okay, all right, you ready to do something. But the people that just come to me like, you know, right now it's a diversity thing, we need to do some stuff, can you do some training? And, you know, and just that kind of flowery, low-hanging fruit stuff, then I already know what I'm going to kind of have to do to try to push them more. I don't give up on them, but I do ask more probing questions to try to say, hey, what is it that you really got me here to do? Like, what is it that you really want? Now, if you just want training, then I'm not saying I'm not going to do that. I'm going to do it, but don't bring me in with the premise of consulting when you really just want training. You really just want to say that you've done anything to top your end-of-year statements off. But yeah, most people have let me push them, though. Oh, I appreciate that.
Well, I love the collaborative cross-organization, looking at the data, all voices in to say, where are we? Where do we want to be? I love this. What will success look like? And you talked earlier about the why. Mm-hmm. So what's our leadership case, business case? Why do we need to be doing this? And then what if some individuals don't get on board?
Mm-hmm.
And negotiating that early, and that's the part where leaders and supervisors, I find, don't have the skills to hold people accountable. It's one thing to do mid-year, end-of-year evaluations, but that day-to-day coaching accountability is such, how do you give feedback, especially across differences, fear of conflict. Mm-hmm. They're a good producer. They bring in money. Yeah, they sexually harass, but, you know. And so,
you know, I have a funny little situation to just share with you because you just said that. But I had interviewed for a job. It was like a diversity position. And I've interviewed for a couple just to kind of see what's out there. I love my job. I love my supervisor. But, you know, you still want to see what's out there. And so one of the questions that was asked to me was, and I think this is the reason they didn't want to hire me too, because they asked me, what will you do with the people that don't want to change, that you can't get the buy-in from? And my response to them was, well, honestly, I have to ask you, what are you going to do? Because I'm here to do the work and challenge them and push them, but what will you do when they don't change? Because I'm not given that power to do that. I'm here to create the processes, the structures for the change, and I'm going to push as hard as, you know, you let me do. So what are you going to do when that happens? And I saw everybody's face kind of change a little bit. I was like, oh, there you go, Angel. You went too far. But I think that's the thing. They think that we can come into these places and just do it. If you are not giving the support and giving the power behind really, really making these changes and really, really getting rid of the people that have been harming folks for years and years and years, then you're creating a position that will fail. And that's the last question.
And we'll go there next. So I'll make sure people heard before even starting internal, external work, asking leaders, I don't know, 10 what ifs. And have them continue through. Someone consistently is causing harm. HR has talked to them. The leader's not willing. What are you willing to do? Because if you're not willing, because you went there, you said, who are you willing to let go of? And so what's their level of resolve and what are they willing to do? Now, you and I both know that leaders say to us, oh, yeah, 100%. And then we hit the resistance. So that's some other strategies that might be executive coaching and working with folks to find out, so what's coming up and what's your hesitancy and how can we. And what I find is particularly white leaders will go a mile and a half with their white colleagues. Yeah, but let's work with them and develop colleagues of color. One, two. And that gets us also maybe to the glass cliff. So could you first talk about what is the glass cliff? And then we'll talk about how do you support folks doing EDI, racial social justice work? How do you support leaders who they're partnering with? Whew, so much good stuff still.
So the glass cliff is a new term, newer term. It's not very new, but I had never heard of it. But there was a professor at ISU, Dr. Carol Ray Behan. She's one of my favorite people. We were kind of talking about just my interest in my research and the things that I was interested in looking at. And she said, well, have you ever heard of the term glass cliff? And I'm like, no, fill me in. And so I went and I started reading it. And the theory itself, they focus on women in leadership roles, such as business, executives, and corporations, how they are put in these positions that are really not set up for success, and how men are less likely to do that. Like, they're typically put into these roles where they're successful. And it looks at women and then folks of color. And so, and I would say folks from any, you know, minoritized identity, I think, could be the situation. And so we bring folks into these very large places. We get one person, and we say, you're going to be the diversity officer. You're going to be the assistant to diversity. You're going to be this. You're going to be that. This one person. And then we give you a committee of volunteers, you know, folks that are adding this to their current workload who may not have been vetted or not. And they say, all right, we need you to change these things. We need you to make this work. We need you to go through every policy, everything that we have. But yet there is no support under them, one, to carry them because it's exhausting work, and to also carry them because you're going to have people that's about to resist you, even the people you thought was your friends, because they're like, no, wait a minute, why would you take this role? You know it's not, you know what you're going to have to do now. And so that you put these people in these places where you're really just doing it to say that you've done it, but you're really not putting money, staff, a title, a lot of times title, pay, or a place on the website, you know, like a lot of times those things are not given to these people, but they're asked to change stuff. One of the other positions that I had interviewed for was going to be responsible for DEI and then also employee retention. And I was like, And so I started doing some research, and I found that, one, they do not pay their people well, and two, they have terrible, terrible benefits. And then on top of that, you know, like it's just the structure system was just really jacked up. And it was a predominantly white leadership, and it also was a hard job. It was within like counseling and drug rehabilitation and all these things. And so I was like, this is one of those glass cliff positions because I can influence diversity, equity, inclusion. I can influence respect and honor to one another on this campus. I mean, in this organization because it wasn't a school. But I can't do nothing about the fact that you're not paying these people, but you're having them work their butts off. I can't do anything about the fact that the structure is the way that it is. Like, if you don't give me that power to do that. So that was one of those positions where a year or two from now, they would have easily been able to say, well, we hired Angel to do this. I don't know. She just missed the mark. She couldn't do it. She didn't change retention. And that would have been my fault, as opposed to the structures and systems that they were refusing to look at and do anything about. They asked me about the budget I felt the job needed, and I told them, and they looked at me like, whoa, slow down. And it wasn't a big budget, but it's what it needs. And so that's where those last clip positions come in. And in my research, I want to look at that on a smaller scale, not just leadership positions, but these committees that we create. You create these committees, but you give them no power, you give them no honor, no respect, no leadership, but they're supposed to go and do something. You can't do that. Like, that is literally, that is why people are exhausted. That's why people are tired. And that is why people are not jumping to do some of these things anymore, because I already know that we're going to do low-hanging fruit and never, ever get to the stuff that's deep or at the top.
And the cost, particularly for folks of minoritized identity, particularly for folk of color, particularly Black, I think, who say, okay, one, I trust you one more time, the emotional cost, the physical cost, the racial trauma,
yep,
immediate re-triggers decades,
yep,
in this national context where racialized trauma is getting re-triggered every day. White folk don't understand. And then when folk of color show up with passion, we say, oh, you're angry, you're militant, you don't fit here, you're unprofessional. And then white folks, as they see, shouldn't have hired them anyway. Deficit.
Yeah.
We lowered our standards. So all those racist tropes, I'm learning that word, those white supremacist beliefs, the whites are always smarter, better, white way is the best, we can then say, see, instead of looking systemic. So
yeah,
two thoughts. How can organizations that are listening to you go, we have created a glass cliff, what can we do now?
Mm-hmm.
For particularly folk of color in these roles, but sometimes there's white women, white queer folk in there.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing I want to get to before I have to say goodbye is, it was your idea, leaders, who are often white leaders, who are partnering with folk in senior diversity roles. Because I'm talking about in the line of supervision now, clear competencies that leaders change in their area. Diversity officers are thought partners, not the magic person to come in. So step one, what can folks do? We have a glass cliff. What can we do now, particularly to build structures so that we're not burning out and then the system continues because, see, we did it. So what can we do?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think really ask the person who they put in that position what they need and then actually try your best to give it to them. I think that we get a lot of times in some of these positions right now, they're hiring a lot of, you know, young, fresh out of college folks who really don't have a lot of experience behind them, and they're just so excited to get the job and to get the title and to get the money that they don't need. They really do walk into here thinking they can do everything that is going to be asked of them. And after, you know, a year or two, they're tired. But I think that we really need to kind of break that down. But what do they need to be successful? Like, as a leader in your department, even if you're not thinking about DEI, what is all under you that helps you to be successful? Why would you think that this person wouldn't need that? Because when it comes to diversity, equity, and inclusion, I tell folks it's got to stop being a piece of the work. It has to be what the work is being done through. And if everything that you're doing, including presidency, CEOs, if all of that has to be done through diversity, equity, and inclusion, then that means that is one of the most important people on your campus, and they need to have just as much support, money, staff, opportunity as you have. And so you got to be willing to do that. And so when you're here, some of these institutions you go to, they got departments that have 10 people, 10 staff members. Now, I'm not saying that they're all doing great work all the time, but to even have that many staff members dedicated to that work is a great start. We got to stop thinking we can do it with one person and a volunteer committee for a place that serves over, you know, thousands and thousands of people. So I think that's probably one of the biggest things. Ask, and then also think about, what do you need to be successful? You need an assistant. You need someone who's checking your calendar. You need someone who's typing notes for your meetings. The DEI person needs that as well if you're putting them in a leadership role to do so. if you're going to have a committee where there's not this leadership role, but the committee is donating their time, then their resume should be able to show that they held a leadership role and they did some really hard systemic work that will benefit them if they ever choose to move on or move up into another position. There should be something they get to gain as opposed to just exhaustion and tiredness being a part of these committees.
Mentoring programs, we have those for employees. How come not mentoring for folks in EDI roles with executive coaches?
And
I love your point. Everything that white senior, upper senior level managers have in their system as well as, quote, support, and that is a, that's going to blow up organizations. That's, and it's, so one reason we started Inclusion Partner Program at Illinois State that many people have done similar processes since was because to get it in the line of supervision so that the manager, the leader, was responsible and the EDI person that was in their department was a thought partner.
Uh-huh.
So as we move towards closing, how about those leaders that are taking it seriously, that are stepping out a little farther ahead than their colleagues? How do we support them so that they're not then, we don't saw off that limb? They actually are leaders and change agents for systemic change.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's probably the stickiest place to be with, because anybody that knows when they have gone through a process of changing the way that they think, or even, you know, this last year, I know a lot of people that talk to me and say, you know, I've lost friends, I've lost family. And so a lot of times, folks in those positions, they lose their capital. They lose their white capital. They lose their white, what is the word I'm looking for? Capital and I can't think of it right now. But they lose that, and that's sad. You know, that they shouldn't have to lose their positions or their opportunities to move up because they are actually supporting the equity work that needs to be done. And that's what I see a lot of. And so, again, that has to come from the leadership even over them. It has to be them supporting this and making sure that all the way down we have structures in place that if the president isn't honoring it or the CEO isn't honoring this position, then there's something that has to, you know, there's something that has to be said. Like, we have to have evaluations in place that kind of shows where we're missing the mark of support for these folks. And then people like that are typically going to be in circles where they have staff and folks that are holding them up. But we got to stop being the ones that are, you know, making half the pay and half the everything, lifting up folks that are making double the pay to do the stuff that's important. Like, we need folks that are making just as much money with them, sitting and standing with them. So I think that that has to be our hiring practices. I think that that has to do with the questions that we're asking, where we're looking for people at. These institutions that do a lot of in-house stuff that, you know, they're not seeking the care or the expertise from anyone outside, that is always going to harm you. Because if you could do it by yourself, it would have been done already. And so we have to start, you know, there needs to be mentorship for leadership. There needs to be mentorship for them who are connected to other folks who are really, really doing anti-racist work on their in their institutions and on their campuses. And we got to listen. You know, one of the things that I recognize working in a lot of places where a lot of the problems are is within the area where the lawyers and stuff are. Now, the thing about that is we have folks who have the power to say no. Nope, you can't say that. You can't do that. You can't. And they themselves are not culturally competent and have no cultural humility. So are you telling me no because I can't do it, or are you telling me no because you don't want me to do it? And when you have people in those type of powerful positions that can say no and you really don't get to ask why, then that's where you are stunted. Like, someone told me, a lawyer said I couldn't use the word identity once. And I'm like, if I can't use the word identity, then you clearly don't know what identity means. And so that's the problem. You get to tell me no, though. And I don't really get the question because you have more power in this situation than I do. So institutions really need to think about the folks that they're putting into those positions as well. It can't just be a degree that gets them there. They really have to be able to also look through this anti-racist lens in order to truly help a person write a good statement, write a good article, make a good response to something, because that can hurt you so bad.
So legal, general counsel, marketing, communications, HR, there are so many gatekeeper roles.
Yes.
New thought I just had, what you're saying is regional, national organizations could hold for senior leaders a confidential space to share what they're doing, resistance, how to because sometimes on our campuses and our organizations, the three or four white leaders with one or two leaders of color, it's not safe necessarily to come together, but it might be. But how do we support those?
Yeah.
Final comment. I could talk to you for a long time, my friend. Thank you. Heard about a president that was just hired that literally wiped out all the senior diversity roles, all the task forces, everything, and said it's everybody's job, therefore we're not going to have. And behind that was we're destroying everything that was trying to create a racially inclusive, socially just organization. So it wasn't just well-intended mistake. And so what advice do you have and counsel for folks that are doing EDI work who have leaders that came in, like 2016 here in the United States, that just destroyed with an agenda to reassert whiteness, white supremacy strategies? How do you, until there's new leadership, what advice do you have? Because I'm hearing that from folk of color, particularly black folk, over and over these days.
I mean, that's one of the hardest. When it's at the top, you know, it's so hard. And we've seen that, you know, within our own experience, our own political areas. We've seen that when the top has a view, it can truly be pushed down onto anyone. You know, I don't think I've ever felt as helpless at times as I did these last few years when it comes to some of those things, because it's like, oh, my goodness, you mean to tell me that we can just create a policy and right then and there it's over with? Like, I can't talk about critical race theory anymore because a document was done. And that is heartbreaking. So it really, really hurts. That makes almost all these positions black positions in a way. And so I tell folks to really, really just, sometimes you have to get back to your roots. You have to get back to the folks that are doing the work, that are just doing the work naturally. And you got to build numbers. So to me, I don't walk in a room thinking that I can change everybody in that room, but I do walk in there with the goal that I will get at least one or two to really, really come with me. And, you know, it's my Jerry Maguire moment. Come with me. Who's coming with me? And if I get them, then they will then, you know, carry it on. I think that if it's so much more of us than them, even if they're in leadership roles, we will make them so uncomfortable to where they don't want to be there anymore. And so if people can't grow, they got to go. And so for me, I just build my circles and keep building them bigger with the folks that are around me and fight. Like, you got to fight. But, of course, that's a risk, you know.
Self-care, community care, prepare for the opportunities. And if they won't grow, they got to go.
Yeah.
Soon to be Dr. Angel Hauer. I am so excited. Oh, owner of Necessary Change Consulting, working at Illinois State University. Thank you so much for sharing insights, recommendations, so much that so many people are relating to and get inspired by. And if folks want to talk to you about what could be next for them, how could you help them in the organization? Executive coaching, I'm just saying. How can people find you?
Well, they can definitely reach out to me. If you go to my website, unnecessarychange.com, there's a form that you can complete to let me know that you want to sit down and have a chat. I love doing that. I'm also working with these two men, Odell Gazelle and Stan Pearson, like thebomb.com. They're speakers themselves, and they do some diversity work and leadership and organizational change work. But we have a program, it's called NAMCA, National Association of Masterminds and Co-Curriculum Advancement, that we've been working on. And so we're trying to allow it to be a space where specifically higher ed folks can come in and get a lot of professional development, a lot of leadership and just how to do this work through a DEI and anti-racist lens, and how to just grow within your institutions to influence the stuff that's going on. So that's something that's really big that I've been very proud of.
You've been listening to Dr. Kathy O'Bear on Transformation Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in, and be sure to catch us next time as Kathy inspires listeners to become agents of change, motivate, innovate, and speak truth to power. Step into the courageous you that will change the world. Connect to life-changing conversations to extend your reach. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyobear.com. That's drkathyobear.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good sunny warm Wednesday to you, Benny Mathers, here for a look at your Alternative Talk AM 1150 traffic updates around the sound. Starting things off over on 169 northbound, southbound, just north of the Black Diamond Ravensdale Road, around milepost number 8, a recent collision partially blocking most of the lanes in that area. State Patrol and King County Sheriff have arrived in the area to take care of that collision. Stay tuned. Coming up next, at the News Weather, it's another hour of the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's the Dr. Pat Show, Talk Radio to Thrive By, and Mindful Astrology, finding the peace of mind according to your sun, moon, and rising sun, with Monty Farber and Amy Zerner.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Taylor. President Biden will announce a national month of action to get more Americans vaccinated. Biden wants to get 70% of American adults partially vaccinated by July 4th. The White House statement calls it an all-of-America sprint. The national campaign will involve local government leaders, community-based and faith-based entities, businesses, social media influencers, celebrities, and athletes. President Biden will raise the issue of massive cyber attacks with Russian President Vladimir Putin at their summit in mid-June. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki told reporters the hacks pose a serious threat to U.S. cybersecurity. U.S. intelligence officials believe Russia is a key suspect in some of the hacks. Putin has publicly denied involvement. Psaki said it's one of a number of hot topics that Biden will bring up with Putin. The remaining parties to the Iran nuclear deal are meeting in Vienna today. Lucy Huff has more from Brussels.
It has been reported that the major obstacles in the negotiations have been resolved. Iran is negotiating with the U.S. indirectly as efforts are made to revive the 2015 accord. Tehran is being urged to come back into full compliance with the deal, while the U.S. hopes to return to the table and plans to loosen some of the sanctions imposed by former President Trump.
New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says the plan is for New York City children to wear masks when school starts in September, despite calls for their removal.
That could change depending on CDC guidance and obviously the fight against COVID, which so far is going really, really well in this city, but we're going to keep that fight going.
There was a rally on Long Island today with parents, advocacy groups, and Congressman Lee Zeldin calling on Governor Andrew Cuomo to lift the mask mandate in schools. And as the country reopens, more Americans are returning to in-person worship services. Gallup says 20% of adults said they went to an in-person service in the last week, which is up from the 13% who said they went to a place of worship back in December. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
You've been diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. You have to carefully monitor your health for the rest of your life. And you have an increased risk of developing cardiovascular disease.
Stop. Take two. Action.
You've been diagnosed with a new purpose to fight for the amazing life you've made for yourself. So look that risk of heart disease square in the face and say, no, not me. You've been given a new opportunity to live. Get started at nodiabetesbyheart.org.
And let's go ahead and take a look now at your Alternative Talk weather outlook for Wednesday. Another gorgeous and sunny warm day we have in store for us today. High temperatures around 84, 85 degrees. We'll also have a little bit of wind out of the west and northwest at 6 to 10 miles per hour. Takes the edge off the heat. Tonight, mostly clear skies. Low temperatures dropping down to about 57, 68. Thursday, partly sunny skies and much cooler. Highs around 73, 74. With partly cloudy skies for Thursday night. Lows down to about 54. For Friday, more sunshine again expected. For most of Friday, highs around 71. Clouds and a slight chance of rain showers moving in by Friday night. Lows down to about 55.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Basile and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show that's coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for that. For all of you out there, again, I'm going to mention it, and Benny, you can jump in. Jacob, you could jump in. Happy Pride Month. If you missed any part of the show I did yesterday talking about why the history of LGBTQ plus is so important in the world right now, please go back to that episode, and you'll find out what it was like to attend Stonewall during the riots, up close and personal, and to watch Bob Dylan be taken away and handcuffed, but I think they let him go. They didn't let anybody else go, but I think they let Dylan go. Today, it's an interesting conversation with, you know, two people I've had on the show before, love them, and love the way they look at the world. And what I mean by that is, look, you have heard us talk about astrology in so many ways, but mindful astrology, find a peace of mind according to your sun, moon, and rising sun. You know, Monty Barber and Amy Zerna joining me here today. Amy, Monty and Amy, that's the show today. They have been on their show a lot. But what I love about them is, like, how in the heck do they come up with these books? What the heck? You know, I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, they are like the machine of consciousness. And I think about what they're doing. They're out there. You go to the Enchanted World. You go to Amy's website. You go to Monty's website. You look at their Facebook pages. And they're like right on top of things. And so today, I've got three copies of Mindful Astrology to give away. Where's the book? Jacob, you got copies of this? Jacob, right there. Boom. See that? My favorite colors, too. So love the colors. Why do I love the colors? Is it my sign?
Yeah.
Is there something that's going on in there? What is Mindful Astrology? Amy, Monty, welcome to the show. You ready to have some fun?
Yes,
thank you
so
much.
The machine of consciousness.
Love that. We're writing that down. We already have a book proposal for that one.
You got to do it. You know, I can't tell you. So we're going to talk about your latest innovation. Let's call it that. I call that this. And what this is about is mindful astrology, and I love this. You know, I'm working with the host right now who hasn't started our show yet, and her show tagline is about freeing your mind. That is her thing. If we get in vogue on here and we're going to play that song, Benny, for your mind, that's what we're talking about. But here's the question. We are looking at astrology. We just went through the blood moon, Sagittarius blood moon. And to be honest with you, I think, like, I found like nobody's really talking about it. I talked about it because, of course, it's my sign. But I talked about it, but there's a mystery about astrology right now, and yet there's a draw to it. I want to ask each of you this question. You know, as I look at the book and as I read the book, and I'm going to go through the book and I'm going to ask you some things, but I'm not going to be like on page this, what did you mean? I want to ask you, I could do that, Monty.
I can answer you.
All right. Okay. I've asked people questions out of their books, and they're like, I haven't read the book in a year. So, I'm just like saying, there's an energy. And I want to ask each of you about the energy that you tapped into to write the book, right, that's about mindful astrology. You know, finding peace of mind according to your sign could be daunting, but what was the energy for each of you that was behind bringing this message forward? What was that like? What was the energy like? Amy, we're going to go with you first.
Okay.
All right.
She's the Aries. Aries always go first.
Well, in our collaboration.
Oh, my mom was an Aries. And boy, you got that right.
Oh, yeah.
We get a lot of them. But I usually think of the title first, and I think at our age and having lived long and mastered certain skills in astrology, the idea of mindfulness really comes into play because we've become more aware of our actions and why we do things and who we are, and we want to know that about other people.
And, you know, when a light bulb goes off, it's the best when you read a book. And we like to give that energy to our books in a very easy, accessible, fun way. Our books are friendly. And we try to make it, some people don't have 30 years to study astrology like we did. And you want to have something that you can really have a nice little meal of astrology. And that's what this is.
I was just going to go ahead, Monty, because I was just going to kick it over to you for a minute.
Oh, okay. Well, in 1988, Karma Cards, my first and our first project, came out, and that teaches you the basics of astrology. And this is really a continuation. That's been in continuous print. It's in 18 languages, just came out in Chinese. But mindful astrology, we wanted to do something that's easy for people to remember so that they can use it as a sort of, not a central organizing principle, but something to keep in mind when they're thinking about people. Because astrology, not only does it show you how unique you are, but it also shows everybody how the same we are. We all have the same pluses and minuses, the same desires. And mindful astrology does that by introducing the moon sign and the rising sign to what we call the celestial trilogy.
Well, you know, look, right out of the gate in your book, what I love about your explanation about astrology is you talk about it from a scientific theory. Let me just say, you know, whatever that means to anybody, but you talk about the people that came out and talked about this earlier and explain why astrology works. But then what I love what you do is later on, then you go, the theory of synchronicity, my favorite, the theory of synchronicity, Carl Jung. And we talk about this. Energy patterns. Astrology lends itself to a viewing that goes deeper than looking up at the sky. And I want to ask you, in mindful astrology, tell us about the interconnectivity of learning the deeper meaning and our intuition.
Mm-hmm. You
want to take it? Well, oh, there we go.
I'll start.
Yes. I love that.
Well, I mean, astrology is so stimulating, and as an artist, it's a language of archetypes, which is what I love. And there's a whole spectrum within each sun sign and with each moon sign, and we kind of address that in the book. And as an artist, I also love that it makes a portrait of each person. So we offer them explanations of the sun, moon, and rising sign, and they have to blend it together. And that's where intuition kind of kicks in as an astrologer. You see all the symbols and you see the energies, you know, fire, water, and earth, and the mutable, fixed. And that's when it creates this picture. So the more you learn as a practice of astrology, just, you know, like any practice, the better you get at it. And we say, do everyone's chart, read your family, read your friends. I mean, and it's really fun, too. And you get to know them because it's the language of the aha moment. Oh, that's a beautiful way to explain who that person is.
And you can get your chart for free online, so many different places. And it says it right in English. So you don't have to know how to read the symbols. It says sun is in this, moon is in this, and rising sign is this. And then you just look it up in our book. We even give you the websites to look it up in. But the thing that interferes with intuition the most is fear. People are afraid of trusting themselves. People are not their own friends. And when you get into astrology, one of the most amazing benefits is you become friendly with yourself.
Yes.
You start to understand yourself a little bit better. You know, and so many people, if someone came up to them with the same problems and the same weaknesses and the same stupid things, they say, oh, don't worry about it. Oh, you'll be okay. You'll be great. But for themselves, oh, my God, it's the worst thing that ever happened in the world.
It's wonderful in relationships for me to understand Monty's chart and for him to understand my chart. And the individuality that it portrays in everybody, I think it goes back to, you know, you celebrating Pride Month to embrace all of the differences and our diversities instead of expecting someone to be just like you.
And, you know, it's interesting, and let's talk about this. I want to jump ahead and talk about, I may even skip this break, Benny. And Benny, just FYI, we have three copies of this really amazing book to give away. There are different versions of astrology, and what I mean by that is there's your birth chart. So for today, we're talking about the birth chart. However, my question to you guys is, you know, there's a birth chart, and I had my solar return done, and I'm trying to find somebody to explain it to me. Just to be honest with you, I got all the charts, and I'm like, please, somebody tell me what this means.
The solar return is a chart that's done for your birthday when the sun returns.
Exactly.
To the place it was on. And that's where many happy returns come from, but no one knows they're talking astrology when they say that.
And I just had the chart run, and I've got it in front of me, and I'm like, I get what you're saying, but what does it mean to me? So here's where my language gets a little, like, messed up. I'm looking for the esoteric meaning. Let's talk about this for a minute. I got my birth chart in front of me, and I have had, you guys are going to love this. I've gone to people that have looked at my birth chart and have said, not very exciting, Pat, but your future looks good. And so when we
don't go to those people.
I don't go to it. I don't.
Okay.
But here's what I've discovered. There's an energy of life, and when we understand aspects of ourselves, the deeper meaning of how we move forward or why we don't move forward or what we react to or don't react to or how things show up becomes so extremely important. And I wanted to ask you, as we look at the book, right, and we're talking about mindful astrology, my sense is the end game here for people is to look at what you actually say in the chapters of the book, wellness and mindfulness, and you talk about this. Can you guys talk for a minute about the mindfulness aspect of astrology?
Well, mindfulness is really bringing your full attention to the present moment. So say, and in astrology, and we explain this in the book, it's your emotional intelligence when you look at the moon sign. So, for instance, if I'm feeling very moody or if somebody I'm with, you know, I get a vibe, you know, that something's wrong, it's usually something to do with their moon sign because that's your emotions. And that's what is kind of mysterious and undercurrents that you feel from people. So the mindfulness is to be aware of what your feelings are in the moment. And, I mean, that's really, it sounds simple. It's not always so easy to do. But if I understand my personality and my quirks and what I'm picking up from other people and know how to be myself and accept myself and be my authentic self instead of trying to be like somebody else, that makes me mindful in the moment.
And you become aware of, everyone has their inner dialogue. We're all talking to each other every moment of the day. But when you learn astrology and what we try to put into mindful astrology is something to add to that conversation. First of all, it'll help you remember you are having that conversation because a lot of times people are reactive rather than active. They react to, you know, what people are throwing at them and pushing their buttons. Mindful astrology reminds you that, A, you have buttons, B, they can be pushed, and see, there's something you could do about it. So that's mindfulness is to not let the winds of craziness, which are blowing big time nowadays, to just blow you around like a piece of paper in the wind.
And also we want to express our highest form of ourselves, right?
Yeah,
I mean, Aries can be bossy. Aries can be...
She admitted it. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Aries can be fighters and very reactive. But we want the highest expression of ourselves.
And Aquarians can be nuts, like me, and just say stuff.
So the more you go deeper into astrology and to understand the spectrum that you have choices of how you can present yourself. And speaking of presenting yourself, that's your rising sign.
Right, that's the big one. Because
let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've had people on the show and they've done my chart and they talk about my chart and, you know, there's a lot that gets explained.
But we really want to know.
Yeah, we really do want to know your life insight because I love the way you present yourself. I love your haircut and the top you're wearing and the jewelry, the whole thing. So I'm really trying. I never guess.
We can guess, but we won't.
Well, it's really interesting.
It's really interesting. And I'll tell you, because I want to just talk about this because I want to relate to the way you approach it in the book. First of all, I love the way you laid the book out, and I love what you explain. And what's really important is you take us through and you let us look at each sign. And we're focusing on sun, focusing on moon, and we're focusing on rising sign today. And for a long time, I know that I presented as this. My rising sign, just so you know, I mean, honestly, when you look at the little houses, and you look at everything going on over here, you'll see I have four planets in Sagittarius or four indicators in Sagittarius, and I have four in Capricorn and my moon, and they're squinched up over there, like there.
Wow, on the rising sign?
My rising sign is Taurus.
Oh, that's interesting. So
no
you're...
kidding. Everybody says that same thing. Everybody says, what? Your rising sign is Taurus?
Well, Taurus is the beauty of the earth, and you're wearing so much of the beauty of the earth right
now. And rolls the neck. Do you wear a lot of necklaces?
I love necklaces.
I mean,
I couldn't decide today.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, there's something. Okay, here's the thing. When a person takes their first breath, they ingest the subtle vibrations of the planets as they line up around your personal nativity scene, which is why we call it a natal chart. And you are that hologram. And the planets don't stand still. As a matter of fact, the word planet comes from the Greek for wanderer. So the planets keep moving, and they make angles to where they were when your matrix of energies was born, when you were born. And so, like, right now, the rising sign, which is the sign that's on the horizon when you're born, is Taurus. The planet Uranus, or Uranus, which is the butt of all astrological jokes, is in the sign of Taurus. So that means you're feeling electric. You're getting that.
You're charged up.
You're ready for the future. It's like, bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what I love about this is that I'm noticing where I'm procrastinating.
Yeah, Uranus does not like procrastination.
It doesn't.
It wants you to wake up every day and feel new and excited.
Well, you said you have a moon in Capricorn?
I have a moon in Capricorn.
And so that's the ponderer. That's the, you know, wanting to mull things over.
Yeah, and you'll always be
over.
There's nothing wrong with that. That's who you are, you know? It's all about making friends with yourself.
Well, and what I love about the way you talk about it in the book is you talk about the basic traits of the 12 rising signs in the book. And you go through and you do that. And I find what you said earlier about we're talking about mindful astrology. And what that means to me is mindful astrology means it's not me on my own planet. Like, I'm here with Benny. I'm here with Jacob.
Yes.
I'm here with you. I've got two producers that, you know, Benny and I have been together, so he knows I'm just going to go all over the place and cancel the break and like that. But for the listeners, I want all of you out there to call into the show. And what you're going to do is get some assistance and help about this.
Sure.
Because here's what I love about what Monty and Amy just said. There are situations in your life right now, and my Capricorn moon might have, I don't know for sure, have taken a little bit longer than it needed to on a major decision that I think Uranus is saying, you need to go ahead. You need to double your space. You need to. And how do we navigate the mindfulness to know that when you are asked to move ahead and then you're asked to ponder, you better come up with the right blend of that or something won't get done. And that's my sense of, you know, understanding these things. I want to ask you this question. As we look at this, how many people really understand the rising sign from your perspective?
Not enough. That's why we wrote the book. The rising signs, it sounds, you know, people say, oh, astrology, it's very specious. Well, if you want to hear specious, the rising sign sounds like the most specious thing there is. It's the sign that's on the horizon at the moment you were born, and it is how other people see you. So if you don't know your rising sign, it's like you got dressed this morning in the dark with your eyes closed and walked out with God knows what matching and clashing with God knows what. You could have three thoughts.
That's where mindfulness really kicks in, because if I understand I'm Scorpio rising, so I know I'm misunderstood, so it makes me compensate.
It's a rising too.
Yeah, I'm a Leo rising, so I'm an Aquarius sun, which is the opposite. So I look, with the hat and whatever, the glasses and the beard and whatever, and the shirts that Amy designed. I do not mind making a spectacle of myself. That's the Leo showbiz stuff. I like it. I enjoy it. But on the inside, I'm an Aquarius looking out because I feel like, the sun sign. I feel this is important for people to move into the future and stop being so afraid to be different. Because, in nature, the males are very often very colorful.
And birds.
So I don't mind being a colorful male.
But if he knows, I was just going
to... I want to go back to Amy. I want to go back to Scorpio Rising for a minute, too, because I'm looking at you, too, and I'm thinking that's why they wrote the book. I mean, there's something about writing books so that these two could actually be together.
That sounds funny.
But I'm fascinated about Scorpio Rising, and I never paid attention to this before. And I find myself, here I am, Taurus Rising.
Opposite.
That's me. The other stuff going on. But I'm surrounded by other people. And my best friend, who, by the way, schedules all of my shows and books it, is a triple Virgo with Scorpio Rising.
Ah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That is a precise person.
Precision is the key word there.
OMG.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. There's no question about it. And yet, Amy, you said something very interesting I want to get back to. I don't think we see Scorpio Rising people as people that want to be understood. And I think that's a great misconception.
Well, I think that's true, because in some cases I choose to be understood when I'm mindful of the situation, if it's not going the right way. And sometimes I choose to remain mysterious because I don't bother to have to explain it. But we can stay under the rock, or we can judge. All the characteristics of every sign, are projected through your rising sign, So your Taurus rising, you seem very stable to the people that are around you.
Yes.
You're the rock, the Taurus, dependable, even though inside you want to tell them off with all your Sagittarius.
Yeah, because Sagittarius is the most honest sign in the world and will sometimes say things that maybe they shouldn't have said, and they know it, but they cannot say it.
I know. Yeah. I sent a text message because we all have an opportunity to extend the space here. I'm talking about a studio and office space. I mean, you came in my office, but we've got studios here.
Wow.
We have a double studio. We're building out a third studio for our expansion.
Wonderful.
And I've been on the fence because of why. Like you talked about, and this is really for anybody out there, understanding aspects of ourselves are so important.
Yes.
But today I woke up, and I don't know what's on the horizon for today, but today I woke up and I reached out to the realtor, who I'm going to talk to at 1, and I said, we're ready to move forward, but you've got to put the numbers down correctly. This is what I want to see.
Right.
And the feedback I got was, you've really taken a really long time at this. I don't know if this is going to be possible. And so this aspect of who we are, where we have these different elements, the one that ponders, and by the way, ponder is not exactly, it was something that I needed to look at very closely. That part of me gets in conflict with the part that just says, just do it.
Well, that's your Sag.
That's the Sag.
That's the fire sign that just want to do it.
And you want to gamble, and you want to take a risk, and you want to... But now with Uranus on your ascendant, you really are ready to open up to new things.
That's the question mark, and that's the understanding of mindfulness, because I don't live in a world of regrets.
There's no point.
It's hard for some people, and I want to open up these phone lines today. I know one book is gone, but we want to take your questions. Do you know your birth date? Do you want to know what's going on with your rising sign? Do you want to find out what a dynamic is? And by the way, what if your soul path brings together people that are maybe the most unlikely people, Amy and Monty, to be together, to have a soul path? What is it we're here to learn about them?
Well,
and
that's
we're
going to
take a short break.
Thanks.
Go ahead, Monty.
I'm so sorry.
Go ahead.
That's why we tell people, don't listen to the people that say, oh, Scorpio doesn't go with the Taurus, and, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Because you got to keep the rising sign in mind, because sometimes the person is looking at you and seeing how they feel. Like if I was a Taurus, I'd be looking at you and you'd be exemplifying everything that I'd be looking out on the world. And meanwhile, people say, oh, well, you know, a Taurus doesn't go with a Sagittarius.
You can't do that. But it's a complementary aspect. When somebody's Taurus rising, somebody's Taurus sun, or somebody's Taurus moon, all those things work together. And that's wonderful to understand through astrology how that's all working.
And when we come back, I want to talk about the mindfulness of this and the way that you've done this and how you bring this to the forefront. Strong willpower for Scorpio rising is so interesting to me. And I love the way you've outlined the book. When we come back, we're going to go through some of the signs. We're going to talk about that rising sign, that sun sign, how that looks. What could that mean? But more importantly, with Amy and with Monty, how do you navigate the waters? Because that's what this book's about.
Yep.
How do you navigate the waters? This is it. And if you're sitting here in the middle of a pandemic and you're thinking about what is going on inside of me, and for me waking up today and saying, I have got to pull the plug and get this thing rolling forward, that may be because today is the day. That this is the day I have arrived. Whatever they said about Uranus may be kicking me in the butt, and I better move forward. Any of you out there feel like you're being called? 1-800-930-2819. I've got a couple questions from people that texted their information in. Jacob's watching Facebook. We've got books to give away. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Ready to put down that drink or drug for good? Are you struggling to maintain your recovery from addictive behaviors? Do you need help with a family member or loved one who's in early recovery or battling addiction? Get the help and guidance you need by arranging a recovery recharge phone session with me, Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, certified life and recovery coach. Call 1-800-889-1757. Make an appointment today or go to my website, pushybroadfromthebronx.com, and click on the link that says Recovery Recharged. Don't wait. Get the help you need today. This is Ellen Stewart, Pushy Broad from the Bronx, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie,
and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
How many times do you find yourself saying, it was nothing, or just doing my job, when really you knocked it out of the park? How did you get like this? Next time someone tells you, great job, you'll know how to accept it and not deflect it by listening to Courage to be Seen Radio with host Sherry Clark. Sherry Clark is an experienced global engineering leader, coach, and mentor. From her experiences one-on-one coaching to corporate consulting and executive coaching, Sherry has learned many women need at least three things to discover and face success. Learn about the ACES program, how to survive male-dominated fields with grace and authenticity, and reach the top without ever once giving up on who you are.
Courage to be Seen host Sherry Clark explores the awesome power of your entire self and how far you can go by being more you. Check out her website, couragetobeseen.com. You have the courage to be seen. See you later.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack, and I'm excited to tell you about the latest technology. It is new to this country, and it's just amazing. Out of Germany. The Healy is state-of-the-art technology for improving and changing the body vibration. I have more information about the Healy on my website, MaryJaneMack.com, or you can call the office at 888-777-4232.
About free your mind, everybody. Wait till Ritika Rose comes on with her show. We're getting ready to really. I got to tell you, we have the most amazing host. For those of you that listen, Dr. Petro, many of you don't know that I also founded Transformation Network and Transformation Talk Radio. And what's happening now is just amazing, and we're going to save that for another talk because I've got Amy and Monty. Both of you, before we get rolling, how do people get a copy of the book, but also how do they find out about each of you? And Amy, you want to go first?
Well, we're on our website, www.theenchantedworld.com. This is the book, Mindful Astrology, but it's everywhere. It's on Amazon and BN, you know, Barnes & Noble and your local bookstore. We love to support local bookstores. But we just, instead of second printing, it just came out a month ago.
Yeah.
That's exciting for an author.
Sold out the first 6,000, and 98% of books last year did not sell 5,000. So we're very pleased, and it's thanks to your efforts and the people that support our work. Like Jacob. Now we can show you what Jacob's chart looks like.
Jacob. Thank you, Jacob. Jacob, welcome
like
to the show. Uh-oh. Look at them. They put the chart up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, we're not kidding around here at the Enchanted World.
Wow.
So a chart looks like a pizza, and the toppings are the planets, and the slices are the houses of the chart. So
making me hungry.
The pizza.
Yeah.
That's my method. Get everybody hungry, then they're hungry for knowledge. So this is the rising sign. The rising sign's over here on this side, you know, for those of you who are watching this on Zoom. The rising sign's here. So he's an Aquarius rising. So he seems cool, calm, collected, doesn't get emotional.
Technical,
futuristic.
He likes the color blue.
If there's a problem, get behind him because he'll solve it, and then he'll get upset after it's all completely over.
So this is how you project yourself, Jacob. So then you are a sun sign in Virgo.
That's over here. That's the dot in the center of the circle topping. That's the sun. And so the sun in Virgo is precise, and it's in the eighth house, so he's a mystery buff. He gets to the bottom of stuff. The eighth slice of pizza of the chart is all about sex, power, magic, like all the advertising words. And then we look for the moon.
Oh, he does like this stuff.
And you guys have the same moon. The moon is in Capricorn.
That makes you get along.
And he has moon exactly conjunct Uranus, so he's crazy.
And also, that's the studio, that 12th house where your moon is.
Yeah, this 12th, the 12th slice of pizza. See, that's what I mean about astrology. It's fun. I once taught a fifth grade class about astrology, and they had the best time, and they didn't have any fights, and they didn't talk. No one said a word.
They're captivated.
Yeah, it should be in every school because it tells you how special you are. That's what's wonderful about it.
No, I just want to say something. Since you both have the moon in Capricorn, that means you get younger as you get older.
Yeah.
I can see that in you, Pat.
Yeah.
I haven't seen Jacob, but it makes you responsible children. You're serious sometimes, you know, serious children, but you're getting lighter and lighter and lighter as you get older.
And having that Uranus conjunct the moon, I was kidding when I said he's crazy, but he's very, very eccentric. And the worst thing is for someone to say, oh, that's, you're like a cliche. Oh, my God. That would be like a stabbing. Because Uranus is not, when you were talking about Uranus on your ascendant before.
Yeah.
That's, and you know, one thing that you talked about was the lunar eclipse. When you're talking about the blood moon.
There's another eclipse coming up soon.
And anytime there's a lunar eclipse, a total, that means in 14 days there's a total solar eclipse.
June 10th.
And you said you woke up today. Well, guess what? Today's the midpoint between the lunar eclipse and the solar eclipse on June 10th. And everyone's like, oh, an eclipse. And we're not talking about the Connecticut Yankee and King Arthur's court. And we're all going to be, oh, the sun's never going to come back. The reason it's important to know about is the moon is your emotional intelligence, which is we talk about in mindful astrology all the time. The sun is your purpose, your ego, you know, the thing that lights you up. So what happens in an eclipse? The earth gets in the way. The moon gets in the way. Forgive me, I was thinking about the lunar eclipse. The moon gets in the way. So that means your emotions get in the way of your ego, or the emotions get in the way of your purpose. So avoid having your buttons pushed during an eclipse. That's what it's all about. You don't want that realtor to be pushing your buttons.
But it can be a major leap forward, and that's why she wants to do this now,
right
after the eclipse.
Because it activates. Eclipses activate.
Is that what it is? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, two books are gone, so I love that. And, by the way, we're going to skip the other break. What I love about this conversation is this helps with the deep understanding. You know, when people pop out and they say, your best friend is a triple Virgo with a
Scorpio rising,
how do you even stay in the same space for 2 minutes? You know, Amy's laughing. I love Amy. I love you laughing.
Because
it's not the only thing going on, and there's a deeper understanding, no?
Yeah, and plus you want somebody like that, oh, my God, in that position.
Yeah.
Because when you hear somebody with three planets in Virgo, you're talking about someone who's precise to the point where they're not going to let you make a mistake. If they got your back.
Well, two very important people in my life are Virgos, and as an artist, I always show my work to them first. I work with fabrics, like the tapestry behind us.
Yes.
They always find the one little thread that's hanging off, so I always show it to them first so everything can be perfect before I present it to everyone else.
Right, and people with Venus and the planet Venus
and
the sign of Virgo.
They're the good critics.
They're the critics, but they can also be very critical of their partner, and a lot of times it prevents them from having partners. So just knowing that one thing about yourself helps you to make friends with yourself, not to beat yourself up. You're picky, that's all.
Yeah, because to be mindful of your perfectionism, and nothing's ever perfect, to be more mindful of how you're picking things apart, you know, if you have all that Virgo on you.
Well, we're going to talk about that in a minute. Because that's a thing.
That's
we got to get
process.
To that thing. Before we get to that thing with the Virgo, that thing right there, because I think something happens to Virgos when they get older, too. But let's go to the phone, because we got Rose. Rose has been waiting patiently.
Oh, good.
Oh, cool.
Rose, welcome to the
Hi.
Phone. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Hey, what can we do for you today?
Oh, okay. I happen to know, I am a Pisces. My birthday is March 11th. I was born 1958 at 2:08 a.m., and I think I'm Pisces with double Sag.
Oh, cool.
You think you're Sag rising?
Are you totally honest? And everyone's like, oh, my God, I can't believe you said that.
Well, I am pretty honest, for sure. Yeah. I try
but then
you're
bad because you're a Pisces.
Well, Pisces care.
I try to be cordial, but yes. But people do like my honesty.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's just it. Everyone of the signs has its positive and its negative end of the expression.
Yeah.
Like in Pisces, you said you're a Pisces. So Pisces, when you think of Pisces, think about someone who really cares, but like Mother Teresa. But at the same time, it's someone who cares so much that maybe they're a little too soft and they get involved in addictive behavior to escape. So Pisces has a spectrum. It goes from someone who's in the gutter escaping because they can't take how harsh the world is, and someone like Mother Teresa who's willing to get her hands dirty to help people.
Are you a teacher?
I have been a teacher assistant, and I'm a hospice volunteer. I'm more like, I would say, Mother Teresa. I have a prayer group of a power of eight group of. So I'm more on that spectrum. I
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I like to really help people and kind of just yeah, that's kind of what I really like. And I try not to get too bogged down. I mean, I've kind of learned, maybe
well,
it's a double sad. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, you'd be helping people, but you'd also be helping them by giving them the straight dope.
Well, it sounds like you're representing the highest frequencies of what you've been given, which is beautiful.
That brings up a really important thing about astrology, because the goal is to get your chart operating on the highest level. You can't look at a chart and say this person is a genius, this person is an axe murderer. It all depends on how free will is manifesting that chart. You know,
yeah,
I'm not saying you're an axe murderer. I'm just saying that's not a Piscean thing at all. But just knowing that you're a Pisces with a Sag rising and a Sag sun, look, that's what I'm talking about, mindful. Just look at all the things that have come to mind. And we're not talking about nonsense. And we're not doing small talk. We're talking about what matters. This is what matters. We're loving each other in the way that the spirit wants us to love each other, which is to have compassion for each other.
Also, with her Sag and Dr. Pat, you have a lot of Sag. You're forever learning.
Yeah.
I mean, you love books. You love learning.
Yeah.
You love sharing knowledge.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's forever, your whole life.
Yeah, the word lifelong learning was created for Sagittarius and Gemini.
Well, it's fascinating to look at this, though. I mean, Rose, isn't it interesting to really get their perspective on this, right? Cause
they seem wonderful. I was listening to them, you know, you guys carrying on conversations about everything, and I thought, I'm calling in. They sound, you know, really,
Thank you.
I'm glad you did.
Really good energy there. Yeah. Well, I appreciate
that. Did you get a copy of the book, Rose?
Pardon?
Did you get a copy of the book?
I didn't. No, I haven't. No.
Stay on the line, and that'll be our third copy, Benny. Stay on the line.
Oh, that's wonderful. I really appreciate that, because you guys sound great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You do holy work for sure. Amy has her Jupiter in Pisces. I have my moon in Pisces. So we not only do we understand Pisces, one of the reasons...
I have Jupiter in Pisces.
That's great.
Jupiter's in Pisces now.
Yeah, you guys are due for a 12-year lucky period, because Jupiter
takes
12 years to go
around.
That's
right. I need the 12-year lucky period.
It's happening. It just went into Pisces. It's going to go in there and
then
it's going to back out.
What happens after 12 years? Am I dead?
Don't worry about that.
Like 12 years, and then now Benny's like 12 more years of her, seriously. Benny and I have been together 17 years.
That's cool.
No kidding. And he knows that I have gotten younger at spirit.
Yep, we're in Capricorn.
Now, I want to ask you this other question, because I have one chart that shows, like, the planets, and then there's this other chart that got these other things on them, like Chiron.
Oh, you mean the imaginary planets?
Like the Chiron thing.
Oh, like the asteroids.
Chiron is like the fly in the ointment, because every chart, they put Chiron on it because, unfortunately, it explains things that nothing else explains. Chiron represents childhood trauma. And as much as you don't want to think about stuff like that, it's the stuff you don't want to think about.
Well, right. I love this, because when I look at that Taurus, it really explains my early life. So can I ask you this question? I know there's very short time left. One, how do we get copies of the book, right? And
how
do they find out about you guys?
The Enchanted World, that's us. That's our brand, theenchantedworld.com. And that comes from the Enchanted Tarot that a lot of people who are into tarot would know about. It's been out since 1990. That's Amy's tapestry work. That's the easiest way to get in touch with us. Our books are everywhere. We have a distribution deal with Barnes & Noble, so we have our own shelf in the spirituality section of every Barnes & Noble. But we want it to be in your local bookstore, so please ask them. Because they need your business. and you know, the thing about a mindful astrology is you can see it in our conversation today. We had a mindful talk. We were talking about stuff that matters.
That's right. I want to talk with you about so people understand things, right? And we've got a few minutes left. I love in the book you talk about physical appearance, you talk about favorable personality traits, and what was Jacob's rising sign?
Aquarius.
And so
He didn't say a word. We don't know if we were right or wrong.
Anything. I don't know. Like what? I mean,
I don't know. He might absorb it. There's so much
information. I think he's going to quit.
No.
I didn't know if he was heading for the hills or what. You know, it's like.
Well, I do need fresh air, though, the Sirius Rising. You always have the window open.
I like to at my where I sleep, but not at the office here.
Hey, he did go camping last weekend. There's enough air there.
True.
See? All right. I need fresh air.
I'm not doing that.
All right. Yeah. To us, camping is sharing a bathroom.
Fair enough.
So here's what I want to say. I want to give you an example. People are going through some interesting things. When Benny and when folks hear me talk about our expansion, and ad nausea, by the way, Benny's like, here she goes again. She goes,
Jupiter and Pisces, Jupiter's expansion.
Like, oh, we're going. So a four-year revamp of everything for us, and we're not even talking about Jessica because I don't know if she's listening or not. There are three of us that must get along here in decision-making about the company, the future, the expansion, right? Then we have our producers that have to put up with the decision.
So
it's fascinating. It's fascinating, the three of us coming together and how it works. But what I'm wondering about is how do we take these different signs, Linda, myself, Jessica's a Libra, how do we take them so that we can improve the energies of each of us? And I think that's what you're helping us with in the book.
That's what we're trying.
I'm just going to tune into the sun sign. So Jessica's a Libra. She's the most
I think Jessica, I don't know what Jessica's sun sign Libra, Linda's Virgo, and my sun sign is Sagittarius.
Okay, so she's the Libra, the most indecisive because they're perfectionistic as well. As Virgo's perfectionist, I say you get the first blast of the vision. I mean, with the Sagittarius, you can see the whole thing.
Oh, my God. When I wake up and walk in and say, I've got a great idea, the eyes roll to the back of the head. Everybody's like, it's like the Exorcist where the heads spin around and they spew green stuff out. So I don't do that anymore.
Well, so then Linda breaks it all down into a practical
why?
Way it's
no,
going to
yeah.
happen.
Yeah, why? Why do we want to do that?
Yeah, and they can dig in their heels, you know, the Virgos. They can see reasons why not. Then the Libra wants everything to be nice, so they want you to be happy.
But the thing about mindfulness and mindful astrology is because you're remembering that people are different and they have a personality. Because
yeah.
most times people are just reacting and treating other people like they're a cardboard cutout that happens to make some noise.
Yeah, and people communicate in different ways and they process things. You know, your moon in Capricorn does need time to process.
Yeah.
And some, you know, moon in Aries is just going to jump in, you know, with both feet.
Right.
So if we know that about people that we're working and collaborating with, you know, it becomes harmonious.
And it's especially
you got to have a sense of humor.
You do, because everyone's so crazy. And it's really important for people with pre-verbal children to know the rising sign of their child, because they may look a certain way, but that's not what's going on the inside. If they're a Pisces rising, usually they give the impression that there's something wrong because they're picking up on all the vibes of what's around them. And if they're Pisces rising, they'll feel the parents arguing in the next room. Closing the door is not going to do anything.
It would enable you to raise different children in different ways depending
right.
on their personalities.
Right, and if anyone's ever wondered, why does my brother see my mother so differently than me? It's because of their astrology.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everyone reacts differently, but not all gears mesh together.
You know, I want to ask you this question, too, because I think that as we go through transitions and changes, and, of course, this is, you know, we're talking about the sun, the moon, et cetera. But you also mentioned what's happening outside of that planetary, you know. So here I am, basically most of my life, I guess, in Taurus in nature, unapproachable. I mean, to be honest with you, if you ask Linda what I was like when through my 20s and 30s and stuff, it is a whole different person. It is the person that was at Stonewall at a very young age. It
Amazing.
Is the person that went to Woodstock. It's the person that marched in every rights, freedom, women, black rights, everything. I'm on the street. I got the biggest sign. I was the first one to march in the AT&T LGBTQ parade with the big sign.
Wow.
And then something happened. But what I'm trying to say is you said something so important to me, I'm going to have to think about what to do with it. Because I have to explain to Jessica and Linda what you said, and I didn't know it was my Capricorn.
Yeah.
I moved into a new home, and there's got to be something in my chart about Cancer. Now, I know when I looked at my transit, there was something about Uranus and Cancer. I've never been in an emotional state moving into a home where putting things in place mattered so much it brought me to tears. These are the things that people like me want to try to understand more. As the Virgo looks at you and says, just get over it.
That is so funny.
It is so true. But if we understand these things, and when we have lunch together, we have lunch meetings, and I'm able to explain, look, I just learned something about my Capricorn. My moon's in Capricorn, you know, and I learned something about not only about where I am in my birth chart, but there's an aspect of processing that's just my nature. Is that the right way to talk about it?
Yeah, sure. But as a Taurus rising, you will, from the book, you will understand that people see you as trying to prove to yourself how strong you are.
Yes.
Therefore,
coper.
Yeah. You'll not only will you cope, but if you come in that day and you say, "I have an idea," you're going to ram that idea down everybody's throat. Because Taurus is there. You know, we're all here to learn about our sign. We don't come in. I'm an Aquarius. I'm learning about Aquarius, being different, being futuristic. As a Taurus rising, you're learning about how to present yourself as strong without overwhelming, because Taurus is a fixed sign, so you can appear more stubborn than you actually are. But Sagittarius are not really stubborn.
No.
And neither is Capricorn, to tell you the truth.
No, not at all.
Taurus is what's called a fixed sign. That's Taurus, Scorpio, Aquarius, and Leo. Those are the stubborn ones. No matter what they say, they're the stubborn ones.
Benny has seen that side of me now for 17 years. He has gotten to experience the Taurus side of me and the evolution in 17 years of stepping into a world that I didn't intend to step into and doing what we're doing today. I want to first thank you both. I hope you'll come back. There's so
much
fun.
Anytime. It's so much fun to talk to.
Yeah.
This is
so unique. You are totally unique.
Yes, you are.
Interviewer and radio host and Zoom host or whatever you want to call. I don't even know what it's called now.
Well, we call ourselves Transformation TV. That's what we were told we are. I'm okay.
You're doing it.
You're doing it.
It's totally unique, and it's a pleasure for us.
Well, I got to thank you. Again, please mention how folks can get a copy of the book, also how they can find out about you, because there's much more that you do. Amy, you held up a card, you know, earlier, which was so beautiful.
And you held up the card,
and you explained something about this expansion space that was so insightful to me. So let folks know how they can find out more about you and learn about the multifaceted way that you help people in the world.
Thank you. Well, our umbrella website is theenchantedworld.com. My own website with my art and my fashion is amyzerner.com. And then Monty is Monty with an E, montyfarber.com, where you can see his astrology readings, his psychic readings, and all the books that we do. Monty's just showing some of the Enchanted Tarot images. They're all done in fabric collage. But we collaborate. I do the imagery, and Monty does the words. 46 years together.
Let me do the math. What year did you get together?
we met in 74, started living together in 75. And
Linda and I became, 1972, we met.
Wow. You got us beat. We'll never catch you.
I think we're older.
Hey, quick correction. Quick correction.
Thank you for joining us, Dr. Scott.
Quick correction on the website. It's theenchantedworld.net, I believe.
Both of them.
Okay, great. Thank you for correcting me. Appreciate it.
Oh, my God. Look at Benny.
Yeah,
Benny on the spot.
Yeah.
wow. I love
my friend Amy's father ran the Stonewall.
A different Amy.
A different Amy. The first Amy that I used to know in public school.
What's her last name?
Gensley.
We have to do a show on this because I'm going to tell you the real deal of what happened.
Okay.
Everybody thinks the riots the riots started because a woman, a lesbian woman, was handcuffed. Three times they tried to get her through the door. There's a whole backstory about the women that were at Stonewall that never gets told.
Ooh, I got chills.
That's amazing. My father was on the wrong side of that. He was a police sergeant.
I don't even want to. Well, you know, we need to talk.
Yeah.
Stacy's family was involved in this too. Just saying, so we can't talk too much.
I think there's a book. There's a book there.
There is a book there. For everybody out there, I know you're asking me questions, and I'll just be really quick. Yes, my sun is in Sag, my moon is in Capricorn. You want to know my other chart? I don't have time to do the whole thing. My Venus is in Sag, my Mars is in Capricorn. They are all in the 8th and 9th house. And yes, it's true. My Jupiter is in Pisces. I don't know. Maybe that's why I cry a lot. Amy, Monty, when we come back, we're going to talk about this book, Mindful Astrology, and the way it helps us carve out a life path. And I hope you'll come back to do that. Let's take a short break, everybody. More on Transformation Talk Radio coming up right now.
The views expressed on this program are those...